Oh, hello. Surprise. Hi. This is Linda Nygaard, and you're listening to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon 101.9. We are working in a studio we're not used to, and we don't have our music here at this studio. So, you'll have to just excuse us for today. I'm sitting here in the studio up on Sunrise Ridge with Truman O'Brien and also with my cohort, Tom Conway. Hi, Tom.
Hi. You know, usually when you have a show with somebody, you go, it's Linda Nygaard with Tom Conway.
You know, usually that's what I have written down here to say. You know, but I was so taken aback by the fact that we have no music.
We don't have music.
It was just weird.
I was hoping to be your music, but or just your muse.
Go ahead. Should we start over?
Or just your muse. No, it's okay.
Okay. Anyway, welcome to Stirring the Pot. Tom and I have a lot of tales of discovery and things to talk to you about today. Our list of food topics seems to know no end.
Exactly.
But today we're going to talk about breakfast. We're going to talk about events on Vashon, stone soup, honey hive. We have a lot to talk about. So let's get at it.
Right on, sister.
How are you, Tom?
I am good. I was lamenting that when we have a radio day, I don't know what this is, this point in my life, but if I have something to do at 3 o'clock, I can't do anything in before that.
I know. Like, what is that about?
I wander around the house, banging into walls, going like, okay, I could do that. And I'm going, but I have a show at 3 o'clock.
I have to get ready for that.
3 in the morning.
And I don't know, you know. Well, but it's kind of fun. It's anticipatory.
It is. And plus, it's fun to go over what we're going to talk about.
I know. It is. I really enjoy it. I have little routines I have to go through at home, you know, to get out the door, get here. And then we just start talking. So,
So what have I been doing?
Yeah.
Besides today, not much.
But true confessions.
It's true confessions. Well, I guess my big thing is I've decided I really want to kind of clean up my house, but it's kind of like after 60 some years on the planet, I got a lot of stuff I don't need, and so I'm fresh off my New Year's resolutions to remove them. I've already cleaned out 2 filing cabinets. And you know how hard it is to get rid of an old-school filing cabinet? It's a really high-quality filing
cabinet. Nobody wants them.
Mm-mm. I was even like trying to push them off on farmers on the island and say, you can put your rutabagas.
Put your chickens in there.
No, put your apples in there, your potatoes, because the rats can't get to them because they're in a metal filing cabinet.
But think about them for a chicken nest. Just open the drawers. Put some straw in there.
Yeah, they get kind of stinky after a while, though.
Well, you have to clean them.
And what if they close by accident? You'd have a sad state of affairs.
Well, I can see the rooster pushing the door shut when the hen's in there. Okay.
She keeps clucking all day. I'm just going to push that door shut.
I have no reports.
Yeah. You know, it's been an odd time for all of us, I think, where we're sort of listless and we're, you know... It is real. I think it's a tough time for generally everybody.
It really is. You know, I think I talked about the fact probably 12 times that I got an Instapot. And so I had an organic roast chicken roast. And I thought, I'll just do it in the Instapot. Won't that be fun? And then I started thinking about it and I went old school and put it in my Dutch oven, my cast iron Dutch oven, because part of that process of roasting a chicken, you know, shoving garlic under the skin and putting the lemon inside the cavity and doing all the basting and checking on it and smelling it. Mm-hmm. That's part of what the joy for me is.
Oh, I agree.
So I understand people who want that chicken in 20 minutes. I get it. Because I've had occasion to do that too. But I roasted the chicken old school and man, was it good. It was really good. And I felt good having the oven and the mitts. And
did you have a vegetable? Was it on a bed of vegetables or something?
I put it on. What I did was I had a bunch of little tiny onions, and I put those on the base. I put a little butter in the bottom, and then I put the onions, and then I put the chicken on top of that. And garlic under the skin, rosemary under the skin, a lemon in the cavity.
It sounds like a dinner that's big enough for 2 people.
Well, I'm eating it still. I did that on Sunday, and today's Tuesday. You know,
no, that was my sly.
Oh, you wanted an invitation?
Wow, it sounds like that's really a 2-person dinner.
Well, I'm going to make chicken curry salad.
Oh, okay.
Now, so
well, that's good. Then it should No, I get it, because when you make something like that, mm-hmm. you get it, you get to eat it for about half a week.
Yeah, I'm probably going to share some of the chicken salad because, you know, chicken, I don't want to eat leftovers all week. But anyway, that's my diatribe about how sometimes the Instant Pot's really good and sometimes you just want that roasty flavor and the sounds of cooking in the oven and, you know, and that was comfort.
Yeah, I think Instant Pots are really good, at least for me. I mean, everyone has a different use for them, but I really like mine for, like you say, things that are more where you want it to kind of, soften up and get sloppy, you know, where it's things like, you know, like you could do a gumbo or you do rice or you do, you know, chicken soup or...
Gloopy.
Yeah,
I know.
That's what I use it for now.
That and the, just the fast, quick. Mm-hmm.
Fast, quick.
Instant gratification.
Yeah. It's really good for pot roast. It does. If you sear the pot
roast
ahead of
time. I did pot roast
in
it. Yeah. What I did not like was how it did the carrots. It just made them too mushy.
Roasted veggies.
So we got to roast the veggies. Yeah. No lazy man there. Hey, so do you have some events going on here in the Sweet Island to talk about?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, one of the things, since we're a local radio station, and I almost said we're local radio personalities, which is hysterical. we're local nutcases.
Nutcases. That's right. There's another word than personality.
Our local color. Anyway, so yeah, there's always something going on, and we like to sort of focus on the food thing. Mm-hmm. So today is, I believe, some of the new things going on. The Vashon Island Baking Company is back from their vacation.
Oh, good.
Which is great. And then...
Have you had those maple bars they make out of croissant dough?
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Oh.
My particular favorites are... I really like their cookies. Mm-hmm. You know, their sugar, their ginger.
I haven't had those.
Their chocolate chip they keep heated in the cabinet, so when you buy them, they're still warm. They're always warm.
Oh, nice.
It's really good.
Yeah, they do a good
great
job.
Great granola.
I'm glad they're home.
They're back open.
Good.
And then I saw Sam, the owner, coming out of the soon-to-be ice cream parlor she's doing. And that's looking really good. So if you're downtown where Bishop's used to be or then the Red Bike, there's going to be the Pop Bottle Shop. And it's looking good.
Have you seen inside?
I know, but the outside, I'm
wait.
So happy. They've
I know,
got rid of that
pretty,
blue.
It's pretty, isn't it? Yeah. It looks really nice.
And it looks like it's going to be really a sweet addition to the downtown food scene.
I think so, too.
And then, let's see, other news, Orca Eats, the food truck, they aren't going to be opened during the winter, but they are going to be open for the food bank on Wednesday, which is a wonderful, generous thing they do. So I saw that on their Facebook page, and I thought, well, that's pretty great.
Emily does a lot of really good community-oriented
she does.
Food things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, she got big heart. Big heart.
As Orca eats anything it wants.
That's right. That's why I like that their motto. In case you don't know, it's like, what does an orca eat? Anything or want?
Anything it wants. Yeah. Well, next.
Okay. Let's see. What else we got going on? Snapdragon has new hours, kids. You get to eat pastries on Thursdays now.
Oh.
So they're back open on Thursdays, I think from 10 to 3, I think are the hours. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Good.
Yeah. We can load up on scan. Yeah. I really like it on Thursday because it's kind of...
You're almost the end of the week.
Yeah.
You can kind of have a little
treat. It's not quite the
treat.
Weekend where you have to fight crowds.
right. I know. Stand
selfish little islanders that we are.
I know.
And then, what was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, yeah. And Gravy.
Gravy. Tell us about Dre.
Yeah, Dre, the chef and owner, co-owner of Gravy. They're in Italy, which is kind of fun. If you follow their Facebook page, I think I've gained 10 pounds just watching what they're eating going through Italy. It looks pretty darn great. But he made a point of saying that he's going to be back in February, and Gravy is going to be opened in February. But he's also going to be a guest chef at Safeco Field. Safeco Field has a program
of some kind.
Yeah, it's called Field to Table. But it's basically
field
to table, and it's at Lumen Fields, and it's back in Soto, and it starts in February, and I think it starts in February 1st, and it goes all the way to February 20th, and pretty much every night or every other night, they have a guest chef, and
is this like a dining room at the
Safeco?
What is it?
Yeah, it's like an outside dining almost like if you were at a wedding and you mm-hmm. have like a tented event, but it looks like it's not a tent. It looks like it's actually a greenhouse kind mm-hmm. of structure. It looks really cool.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah. So he's on the 10th of uh-huh. February, and they have everybody from, the restaurant, the Lake House to, mm-hmm. Communion, Musang, Eden Hill.
I don't know Musang.
I don't know. These
we
must
better
be,
check them out.
We got to get out to Seattle more often.
We have to get out over the water.
Exactly.
And that's when?
And that is, he's going to be doing that on the, let's see, the 10th of February.
Oh, good. Well, I have a little event.
Cool.
That's going on, and it is not food related, and so this is a little selfish of me to do this, but it's dear to my heart. There's a fairly new repertory company on Vashon called Vashon Repertory Theater. And they are presenting plays that are either locally or at the very least Northwest written. And usually first time young playwrights or people who don't have a lot of experience. And they're also, or maybe some well-knowns who are doing a reading of their play before they go into actual production. So this is called the Incubator Series. And it's the third Monday of every month, and they'll present a staged reading of a new script by a local author, and it's at VCA at 7 o'clock. So the third Monday of every month, and it's pay as you will. And if you can't, you don't have to. Masks and vaccination cards are required. But the thing that I'm so excited about is that January 24th, mm-hmm. which is right around the corner, Vashon Rep is going to present a play called Kichi. Oh, dear. Now I lost the play. it's about Japanese sailors who survived 15 months at sea. It's in the 1800s.
Oh.
And it's written by Seattle playwright Brian Willis.
Okay.
Who's pretty well known in the area, I guess. And these Japanese sailors survived 15 months out in the Pacific Ocean until they were washed ashore at Nia Bay.
Oh, you know who had a little blurb on this was
Mukai.
Mukai, and also on PBS Moss's Northwest.
Mossback. Yeah,
he had a program about it.
Well, so anyway, on the 24th is going to be the reading, mm-hmm. 7 o'clock VCA. And then in September of 2022, Mukai Farm is going to produce the whole thing for real for the Japan Festival.
Cool.
So, I just wanted to add that in there because it's really exciting. It's new theater. It's new blood.
Yeah. Oh, that's really great. Yeah. And especially because it's an original piece and it speaks to some really interesting history. You know, like those little stories that you go, you know, the little side stories of history that kind of create the tapestry of our region.
Know. Yeah.
Because I think one of the parts of the story is they didn't get to go back to Japan.
They didn't, and they ended up being enslaved.
Yeah,
but by not the Native American people who lived at Nia Bay.
Oh, they did.
They did.
Oh, I heard it. I heard something else. So I'm gonna have to. I'm excited to get the
fun.
Real story.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, maybe I'll get the real story too.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Linda.
What?
I forgot to mention one more thing on what's going on in Vashon.
Yeah.
There's a new food truck opening up in February, and it's going to be at the, it's going to be, as they say, moored, because the name of the food truck is Anchor.
Okay.
Like Anchors Away. Uh-huh. And it's going to be a healthy cafe drive-through on Vashon Island, our little island, and it's going to specialize in smoothies, gourmet oatmeal, specialty coffee. And it opens in 2/2/22.
So healthy food in mm-hmm. front of the athletic club. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense. That'll be fun. Did you ever listen to that website I told you to get to called How to Feed a Loon? Those two guys that are on there talking about all the things they cook. You didn't.
Mm-mm.
Oh, well, that's okay.
Sorry.
We'll talk about how to feed a loon next week.
You sure?
Yeah. I don't want to talk about it by myself because it's too funny.
Well, no, you can talk about it.
Nah, we'll go on. Let's move on.
Just for our listeners, I just got the biggest look of disappointment.
You did not.
Like, you know, when you come home and your mom and dad go, so you got a D in physical education?
It's not true. I did not look at him like that. And I don't. He just likes to, oh, well.
That's true.
Okay. So do you know the story, the stone soup?
Yes.
Do you know that story about stone soup?
Saw it on Captain Kangaroo.
Good. You did?
I did.
I don't remember hearing it.
He would read
kid.
The book and then you'd see, and it was old school TV, and they would turn the page. And
sure.
It was where there were soldiers.
Oh.
And the soldiers were hungry and they went to a village. That was part.
And the village fed them with stone soup?
Well, they started it off with saying, we should make stone soup.
Yeah. Well, you know, stone soup is an old parable from everywhere. And it's, depending on, you know, what country you're in, it could be a Somali boy is the hero. It could be a nun is the hero. I mean, there's all kinds. I even found one that is a surfer and he's stirring the pot, so to speak. But in every version of the story, there is resistance and skepticism. In other words, so the story, I'll just tell you the story in 25 words or less. The old woman sits in the middle of the village. This is old, old ancient times. And she's just stirring a pot of water over the fire with a stone in it. And people go by and say, what are you doing? That's not going to work. This isn't going to happen. You're, you know, belittling her and very skeptical and also fearful of her. She looked strange. She was doing something weird. So, you know, she was the other. And eventually somebody came by and dropped in some onions and then somebody came by and dropped in some stale bread. Somebody maybe had some leftover, you know, whatever from the night before. And the village kind of started putting good veggies and things in the pot. And pretty soon they had a beautiful pot of soup that absolutely fed the whole village. So that's a short version of the story. And I was reading about stone soup when I, let's see, how do I say this quickly? Gabrielle Hamilton is one of my favorite writers and chefs in the whole entire world. And she lives in New York City. She had a restaurant called Prune. And she wrote a book years ago called Blood, Bones, and Butter. And if you ever want to read a book about what it's really like to open a restaurant, I mean, she's a fabulous writer and wonderful storyteller. And she relates everything back to the human condition. And, you know, she describes in there how she was down at 2 o'clock in the morning in the drain through the concrete, digging with her bare hands to unclog it. You know, mm-hmm. things that we don't think about happening in restaurants, along with the wonderful food and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. But anyway, she was talking about how...
And this is in New York City, right?
New York City, yeah. She was talking about how when she started to open Prune, it was in a very small space. And it had been previously a well-loved restaurant. So the neighborhood was really excited that she was coming back. And well, she wasn't coming back, but the restaurant was coming back. But she said people kept coming by and saying, well, aren't you going to be vegetarian? Or that they wanted the old restaurant back. Or they wanted some breakfast menu kind of thing.
I think if you own a restaurant, that's one of the things that probably makes your ear bleed is everyone says, you know what you should do?
Yeah, you know what you should do. And that's what she had was that. And, you know, and she wanted to name it Prune, P-R-U-N-E. Mm-hmm. And people were just appalled that she would name a restaurant Prune, you know. And there's a story behind that, which I won't go into. But anyway, if you want a good book, read Blood, Bones, and Butter. It mm-hmm. is fabulous. I lent it to somebody and I never got it back. But
now is she's going to open the restaurant?
Well, anyway, so she's opening her restaurant again. She had to close for COVID and now she's getting ready to open again. Same location, same restaurant, but it'll be a different menu and different things. And she said now she's running into the same thing again. But she decided this time to put paper up on the windows right away so nobody can look in. Mm-hmm. And then she talked poetically about how every restaurant in the whole universe is doing stone soup. She said, think about it. She said, you have the guy over way far to the left who's making the broth. And so he's got that going on. He's making stock. And then you've got the woman over in the corner that's chopping onions and celery. And that goes in that pot. Somebody else brings the red peppers or there's some other thing. And it all goes into the pot. And she did this article in such a beautiful, it was her last article that she wrote for the New York Times Magazine and for the food. Mm. She's been writing for them since she had to close a restaurant. Oh, okay. And so this was her last article. And she said this, now she knows really what stone soup is. And it's her intention to take that metaphor into her restaurant and have communal cooking with everybody in her kitchen, putting energy and love into all of the food so that pretty soon your stone soup turns into delicious food and you are feeding the village. Mm-hmm. And what she says is, you know, every restaurant feeds the village.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a really great point. It's a lovely mm-hmm. full circle.
Mm-hmm.
And even if we want to expand that circle, it's also like you think of all the farmers that brought the food to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I know. Then you go back that far. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was talking about how all the skepticism, the article's very good if you can find it, but she also talked about how fear of the other or the skepticism or the negativity, you know, that people have around something new, something different.
Yeah. Know? No, I have like a little saying about that. Like cynicism is a great meal that ruins dessert.
Yeah, really.
I think I say it better than that, but that's about what I can, how I remember usually. But it is that thing where I do feel like sometimes we're all too cynical. We're all too mm-hmm, opinionated.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like we base the world on our own opinions, and shockingly, we might need to dilute that a little bit.
And really, it doesn't, your opinion really doesn't matter.
Like, you don't have to have an opinion.
No.
That's the thing. I really don't. I think everyone feels like they have to, mm-hmm. you know, you can watch it on everything from social media to commenting.
Right.
Like somebody shares something and mm-hmm. then somebody else will tell you why it's not appropriate or proper or
right.
why it's not the real deal or why it's...
Or where you're wrong.
Exactly.
Got your fact. I think so too. There's a lot of expectation around my opinion mattering.
Exactly.
You know,
we need to be a little more generous as a culture.
Well, you know,
society.
For a little while, I got into a thing where I like to have opinions.
Doy.
You know, and then for a while, I thought, you know, my opinion really doesn't matter. So there are certain things now where I see something happening and I'm appalled or I have a big opinion about it.
Uh-huh.
And then I choose.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm not going to have an opinion about this.
Mm-hmm.
Really, because you can stress yourself out with your own opinions.
You really can.
You really can.
It's kind of nuts.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to talk about Gabrielle Hamilton and her wondrous stone soup and feeding a village.
Well, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
If we have time later on in the show, I'll have to share with you something I was going to talk about, and because it's about what you talk about, and it was basically at age 20, Benjamin Franklin created a list of 13 virtues. So that's why I'm sort of fresh off of my virtuous self.
I see.
Because it impressed me what he felt
mm-hmm.
were the virtues that we should pursue.
Well, you should just say them.
Should I just go ahead?
Yeah, just
okay,
go ahead.
Okay, cool. So he has 13 virtues. The first one is temperance. Eat not to dullness, drink not to elevation.
Well,
number two. Yeah. Well, we'll ignore that.
The
one.
Drinking part I can go
yeah,
for,
we can
but
easily,
the eating part I
yeah, yeah, exactly. Silence. This is the one that made me think of it. It says, like, speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversation. Order. Let all things have their places. Let each part of your business have its time. Four is resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought. Perform without fail what you resolve. Number five is frugality. Make no expense but to do good to others or yourself, i.e. waste nothing.
Mm-hmm.
See, these are good, aren't they?
They're really good.
Number six, industry. Lose no time, but always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions. Dang,
uh-oh.
Let's go to town.
Help.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's funny. The other one, sincerity. Use no hurtful deceit. Think innocently and justly. And if you speak, speak accordingly. Number 8 is justice. Wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty. And then moderation, avoid extremes, forbear resenting injuries so much as you think they deserve.
Hmm.
Oh, here we go. This is us. Did you take a shower today?
Yes.
Cleanliness.
Did you take a shower today?
Yeah, I think, yeah. Tuesday. Yeah, I did.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Tolerate no uncleanliness in body, clothes, or habitation.
Ooh.
Number 11 is tranquility. Be not disturbed at trifles or at accidents common or unavoidable. And then number 12, chastity.
Never mind.
Rarely use, I don't know this word, but you do. Venery?
I don't know that word.
We'll have to look. I'm sure it's something dirty.
What's 13?
Something dirty or something.
There's something about something.
We're not too edumacated. Okay. But for health or offspring. Oh, that's what that is.
Oh.
Don't be doing it just for doing it. Well, I don't know. We might have to throw out number 12.
Who is this?
This is Benjamin Franklin.
I was going to say, is it Thomas or Benjamin?
Benjamin.
Okay.
And then number 13 is humility. Imitate Jesus and Socrates. So it's quite a combo there.
Well, okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm working on Buddha myself.
I'm totally going for the Buddha look.
Yeah.
When I was a kid and I was chubbier than most, my dad, we lived in Japan, and my father thought it was hysterical too, because there was a local tradition of rubbing hotai's belly for good luck.
Yeah.
So he liked to rub my belly like I was hotai.
Cute.
Going, yeah, it's really adorable.
Well, it is cute. Yes. You know, we have so many things that we could talk about. The grocery store situation brought a whole new subject to my mind the other day. You know, you and I were talking about supply chain. I couldn't think of the word.
Oh, yeah.
And how we go in the grocery store and there are certain things that are not there or that are in very short supply.
Right.
And it's all, you know, it's just all about the supply chain thing that we don't really understand, but we say, oh, well, it's the supply chain.
Right. And some, you know, some businesses have, like I had a friend who was grocery shopping
mm-hmm.
and they didn't have any trouble in Fred Meyer's, but they wanted to get some other stuff they usually get at Target. And then basically all of Target. So the Target supply chain was like completely disrupted. It was, the store was pretty much half empty.
Mm-hmm. It was. I went to Target about a month ago.
Yeah.
For the first time in 2 years. And I was like, why am I even here?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, I started thinking about supply chains with regard to food mostly. But it occurred to me that the people that really have a big part in the supply chain are the truck drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about their, how would it be to be a truck driver, a long haul truck driver, and eating at, truck stops every day? And how would that be? How do they do this?
And driving ridiculously long hours. Yeah.
Well, then I did a little research to see, you know, I just was looking at trucker food. What is it? You know? And do you know that there are many, many, many truckers out there now? There are 3 million long haul truckers in the United States.
That's pretty insane.
3 million.
That's about
truck drivers.
1% of the population.
Jeez.
That's crazy.
I read that. I couldn't believe it. But anyway, so thinking about the kitchens, they have these tricked out trucks now, like they're doing RVs, you know, with fancy kitchens in them. They're doing the same thing with fancy new trucks.
Oh, so they have like an extended cab to the...
Uh-huh. There's even a little bathroom in there.
Wow.
And that's a pretty amazing, I'm sure, big money kind of purchase. But there's a woman who's a long-haul truck driver, and she has a kitchen in her truck. And she talks about all the different foods she made. Like at Christmas time, she did a full-on Christmas dinner in her truck, because she said, I'm away from home. I want the comforts of food. I want to cook, and I want to do this. So I did some...
I see a movie script here, you know?
Oh, really?
Wouldn't it be great?
Wouldn't it be great? Yeah. A road trip cooking
Sandra Bullock,
in a truck.
Sandra Bullock, long haul driver.
Oh, yeah. We better write a grant.
Okay.
Let's do that. But anyway, I started looking up, and I... Since we're not television, I can't really show you anything, but some of the gear that they have for trucks now is absolutely stunning. They have little tiny blenders and little tiny
Is it like a built-in unit? Like the unit is totally designed.
Some of them are. Some of them are built-in. Hers is not. She has little shelves and, you know, here. Let me see if I can find this. 3 million truckers in the United States, and the supply chain issue was bothering her too, and she couldn't get home for Christmas. So she just said, "I'm doing it myself."
Wow.
So she did it herself, and she's got an air fryer that sits on a shelf where the passenger seat used to be. And she didn't bake. She doesn't bake. But she can buy some good pastries.
I'm impressed she did anything.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, she has mashed potatoes and cranberry sauce and all that.
Does she invite the other truckers over? Or?
I wondered. It doesn't say anything about that, but I thought about that too. She said her meals aren't too difficult to do, she said, but doing the dishes isn't very much fun.
No. Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, when you think about it, like 50 years ago when with long haul truckers, there was sort of this romantic on the road perception. And that when I was a kid, I used to think it was really cool because they got to eat out all the time.
I know. Well, yeah, would.
They'd have these great truck stops and the food was usually pretty good at a truck stop.
Well, yeah. And
there was always pie.
We never get tired of hamburgers.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, there are also YouTube instruction videos on cooking in your truck and how to do it and what kind of equipment you need. And then I found a website called Schneider Jobs, and it's a trucking industry website. And they've got recommendations for the top cooking equipment that you can put in your truck.
That's pretty great.
I just really love this. So now I'm kind of thinking I want to find some truck drivers who cook in their trucks and go see it.
You know what you could do is we drive over to Ellensburg.
Yes.
Because they have a big truck stop over there.
And just go interview people. Go,
hey.
Do you have a kitchen in your truck?
Hi, this is my friend Linda.
Wouldn't that be fun though?
And then we'll throw out our big credentials. We have a radio show.
We have a radio
on
show,
local,
you know. Do you want to say hi? Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, that's pretty fascinating.
I know. I think so. If you want to look up cooking gear for trucks, look up Schneider, Schneider Jobs.
That's pretty great.
.com.
I love that.
I know. I read it. It was really good. I enjoyed it. I'm going to be doing some more research on this too, of course. What else are we talking about today?
Oh, got a lot. Oh, let's see.
Honey.
Oh,
want to talk about honey? Did you have something different?
What? No, I like honey.
Like honey too. How's your honey?
My honey is good. I have sorry, I was gonna go. Thanks, honey.
Oh, honey.
I have. Well, it's really not true. I don't have. I have one beehive, and then I have six beehives.
Right.
And the six beehives aren't really mine. Because my friend Annie Myers is the queen. She's the queen bee.
She really is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's a much better beekeeper than I am. And when she once asked if she could put some hives on my property, I said sure, because I was having such a difficulty in keeping them alive from year to year. Mm-hmm. And really, as I've said before, honey should be, you know, $20 an ounce.
Yes, it should be. My God.
It's hard to keep. Mm-hmm. You have to really work it to keep those bees healthy and happy. And everybody likes honey, just like everyone likes chicken, you know. Mm-hmm. And so nature's always out there trying to get it from the mice to the voles. To the bears. The bears. To the yellow jackets. But anyway, so I have six hives. And yesterday, the other day when we had actually a non-foggy, warmish day, they were all a buzzing, so that's a good
sign.
Were they
out of the hive?
They were out of the hive.
They were.
In January, that's a really good sign.
Well, you know, I just learned, and I did not know this, but I just learned that honeybees huddle together all winter, and they shiver and they shake inside their hive, and that's how they stay warm.
Yeah, I would venture to, I think, accurately say that bees are the most amazing creature on the planet, with basically what they've evolved to and what they can do from that to that. Then they can take another step where they use their wings to cool in the hot summer. They can air condition their, so to speak, their hive. So it's cool. I mean,
and aerodynamically, they should not be able to fly.
Yeah. Bumblebees especially.
But, well, I have a little bit of history. I found that nobody knows when honey was first discovered or who ate the first honey or how did that go. Mm-hmm. But honey gathering first began before 2450 BC. They know that much. They just don't know how far back. And it went back into Egyptian
history. I was going to say, history. That's probably Egyptian.
Yeah, that's Egyptian history. And, you know, the Egyptians believed that bees were sacred. And so they gave them as gifts to people sometimes. And then they would have honey from the bees that they were gifted.
That was a good gift.
It was a divine and sought after treat. So recently, scientists or archaeologists have discovered in southwestern Spain a cave painting of a man climbing a rope on a cliff, and above him is a giant honey hive. And he's going up this giant cliff to pick this honey or gather. We call it gather honey. And
what an amazingly brave soul!
Can you imagine? Anyway, it's one of the earliest cave paintings that they have ever mm-hmm. found, and it's about honey. And they show it's important for different aspects. They said because, you know, honey's nutritious, mm-hmm. and it's fresh from nature, and it's sweet. And you don't often get sweetness mm-hmm. that easily.
That's true. It's rare.
And honey gathering scenes have been found in the region in caves, but 8,000-year-old depiction is the oldest known. And so when you look at this picture, I saw a picture of it in, I don't know, National Geographic, I don't know where it was, but the honey hunter is suspended over the side of a cliff mm-hmm. from the top. And then there's another picture of a guy going from the bottom up. It's just amazing the lengths people go to for honey.
Yeah, I've seen those same pictures mm-hmm. and they're pretty, there's some in Indonesia or Malaysia, they're basically climbing up a mountain mm-hmm. to get the honey. Mm-hmm. That
I like to cook with honey. I'm going to put a recipe on Stirring the Pot page for uh-huh. a honey cake that is so delicious. It's very light, has uh-huh. almonds on top of it.
Nice.
It's just a nice little tea cake or something. It's easy, easy peasy.
Oh, that sounds good.
Take you 20 minutes to put it together and it has a cup of honey in it.
What other things do you like to use honey for?
Well, I use honey a lot. I mean, I always use it in my tea and the regular stuff, you know, but I don't really substitute honey for sugar in baking. Some people do, but I don't.
I think it's kind of I don't want to say it's not a waste, but I think for when you're baking something, when you're taking something like that
mm-hmm.
and you're putting it in a batter or something, mm-hmm. I think it definitely adds a lovely sweetness to it. But it's one of those things where it really is at its best as a fresh.
And it tastes so good. I got honey this year from Heidi and David Skrypek.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, now it has turned, it looks like it would be crystallized, but it's not.
It's like creamed.
It turned into creamed honey.
I love creamed honey.
Oh, my gosh, it's good. And then I learned that creamed honey is now on the upswing for popularity.
Oh, it really should be. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you ever want to make it, you know how you make it? You just, if you buy it at a store, creamed honey, you can take like a teaspoon or so
mm-hmm.
and put it into a regular honey and just stir it in. And then what happens is the crystal reaction.
Really?
The structure of the creamed honey will basically take over the non-crystalline structure of
well, that's
the honey.
Well, that's a good budgetary
yeah.
plan because creamed honey is very expensive.
Yeah.
And delicious.
And delicious.
I can eat it by the spoon, of course.
No, it's pretty fab.
Yeah, it's really good. What else you got?
What do I got? Well, let's see. Hang on. Let me look at my mini notes. Oh, I know I was going to tell you. one of the things, this is on Vashon. This just, sometimes we have to realize we do have an audience and when we share our,
be careful what you say.
the 10 people that are listening will be like, exactly, be careful what you say. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I have, my friend Bridget and I, we joke about because Tuesday is senior day at IGA and it's
yes.
10% off. And
right.
10% is 10%.
10%.
So they have in their meat section, you can buy five packages for $20, but yeah. on Tuesday you still get the 10% discount, so it's our total.
Oh wow!
And
yeah.
But what's kind of fun about it is we find the the five items or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then we you have to through the week come up with ways to
you have to use it. You have to actually use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I usually buy a pound of hamburger and I make a Joe's special, which is I think one of the best things you can make on a budget, but tastes like, but it's really good. I mean, 13 coins, it's on the 13 coins menu. So, you know,
it is.
Yeah. So it's kind of hoity.
Yeah.
For breakfast or lunch or dinner, but it's basically known for breakfast. And mm-hmm. what it is, it originated in San Francisco. I believe the restaurant was called Joe's Original. And so, it was on their menu as a side dish, but it became kind of a main dish for most mm-hmm. people. And it is a little bit, there's a little bit of hamburger helperness to it, but
no. But it doesn't have pasta in it.
There's no pasta in it. You're right.
No.
Well, I'm taking that back.
Yeah, take that back.
It's much better.
Oh, I say take that back and I'm not sure what it is.
Okay. All right. So here we are. Okay. Envision a cast iron pan or a frying pan.
Right.
Okay. Whole onion diced.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of olive oil. You saute that until mm-hmm. it becomes translucent.
Mm.
And then you put in a pound of hamburger. And then you you stir that and you wait till that's like pretty much mostly cooked. You know, you can mm-hmm. have some. You can have a little bit of pink, and if it's
you
really,
don't want it brown,
you don't want it dry. No. You want it still, you know, some moist.
Yeah.
And so then we try not to say that word because we
hate that word.
We know that people are cringing all over Radioland. Moist. Okay. So. We take this.
I just love how you think you're so funny. because you are.
Well, and I live alone, so yeah, I
know.
Who else is going to laugh?
Our audience probably doesn't know that you live alone and I live alone, and this is our biggest social event
exactly.
of the year. I mean, of the week.
We each have a friend.
Yeah, we each have a friend. Anyway, okay, back to
the frying pan.
So we're at the hamburger.
So the hamburger, we got the hamburger, we got the onion. And mm-hmm. the original recipe calls for garlic, but I say niet on that garlic.
No.
Not for the breakfast part of this dish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then if it's really liquidy, you can drain it. Just drain mm-hmm. it a little bit. So then the next thing you do is you put in like just chopped frozen spinach. You know, like one of those little block packages.
Yeah.
And then you stir it
around.
Can
I use fresh spinach?
You can totally use fresh spinach. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then you mix it all up, and then you basically push it to the side like you're making a crater.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. Like I want it to go around the rim of the pan.
Around the rim of the pan so that you're exposing
I have a circle in the middle.
Right. Like when you make pasta, you move the flour out, and you mm-hmm. put the eggs in the middle. Okay. So then you take as many, you can determine as you're making this, how many eggs you want,
mm-hmm.
usually between 6 to 8. And I usually like, one, depending on how the eggs. So then you scramble, you whip those up,
mm-hmm.
and then you pour them in the pan, and then you slowly just keep stirring them in that crater
mm-hmm.
until they start to get sort of gelatinous and mm-hmm. stuff. And then when they get kind of like that, and they're sort of firming up, but they're still gloppy,
mm-hmm.
You stir all this up. So you've got the hamburger, the onions, the mm-hmm. spinach, and the eggs. And then you shut off the heat,
mm-hmm.
stir it up again a little bit more, and you put about a quarter to a half cup of Parmesan on it, Pecorino, mm-hmm. or Asiago, you know. And
but what if you wanted cheddar?
And you could do cheddar.
Cheddar might work. Cheddar, it would change the texture.
Cheddar kind of makes it more of a Denny's dish, but it's...
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, no. I'm putting my foot down.
No cheddar. No creaminess cheeses.
No, you don't want creamy. It's not. You're not making mac and cheese. We want more of a
flavor.
You want that sort of what'd you call it?
Nutty,
piquant.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of a bite from mm-hmm. from a hard cheese.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's what you do, and it is so good.
I just don't know about this dish. I just don't know. And first of all, I don't want hamburger for breakfast.
Well, then you can have it for lunch. This is what's great.
I think I might. I mean, I would try it.
It's a hugely, it became in the 50s and 60s a hugely popular dish all over, but then it was a popular dish in California. It became such, people loved it, and so it became kind mm-hmm. of a, you know, the Wednesday night meal, Joe special.
Well, I think it would be good with breakfast sausage.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do sausage and then scrambled eggs. But anyway, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that dish.
I think it's called a scramble.
Well, I've heard of a scramble, but I've not heard. What'd you call it? Joe Special. Joe Special.
Yeah. From San Francisco, the San Francisco treat.
Are you gonna make it soon?
Yeah, I've got some in the fridge. If you want to come home after this, I'll make you some Joe Special.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah. I'd like that.
Okay.
You know, one of the things we were going to talk about, and we're getting close here, is breakfast.
Yeah.
Just in general, we wanted to talk about breakfast.
Is that your favorite meal?
Oh, it's my favorite meal by far.
My favorite meal. That's
by
why I like
far.
You. Mine too.
Oh, yeah, by far.
Yeah.
And you know what else I have found out is that I have enjoyed having people over for breakfast as opposed to having people for dinner.
Okay, if we weren't on the air, I'd give you a high five right now. That's my thing.
Yeah.
I totally prefer, like, I love it when people just come over. Trust me, this is such wow, we just discovered something about each
something
other.
Something new.
Yeah. Hey, you and I should have breakfast. But
we should. But we do.
I have friends who, when they drop their kids off, and they'll just go, hey, what are you up to? And they'll come over for coffee, and then it ends up being breakfast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Well, you're a good breakfast server. That's for sure. And I love
hash
breakfast.
Hash browns, baby.
So what's your favorite breakfast?
So I have a couple, because I do find I do like to mix it up.
Mm-hmm.
But they're okay. So the first one is your good old all-American lumberjack breakfast.
Yeah.
Where I like to make hash browns.
Okay.
And sausage.
Mm-hmm.
And either fried eggs or poached or scrambled.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually like English muffin or biscuit. If I have people over, I'll make biscuits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, biscuits.
Did I miss anything? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think, and then you ask, what's your favorite breakfast, Linda?
Oh, hey, Linda. I just thought you had like watercress, a glass of water, and a little water.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. You know, my favorite breakfast in the whole wide world.
Strawberry.
Well, I don't know. There's two, really. They tie depending on
Let
my
mood.
It's my mood.
French
okay.
toast?
No.
Pancakes?
No.
Oh, Dutch baby?
No.
Okay.
Waffles.
Oh, I was in the
waffles.
Right neighborhood.
You were in the
of
right
yeasty
neighborhood.
Yeasty neighborhood, yeah.
Because, you know, it could be waffles or pancakes, but I prefer waffles. And bacon. But, of course, I don't eat pork anymore.
Oh.
So now it would have to be,
yeah.
I don't know. But
Do you do the kind of waffles where you whip egg whites and you blend it in?
I have, yeah. And sometimes yeasted. But, okay, you know, kitchen hacks. We like to talk about shortcuts in the kitchen. I discovered a secret waffle mix that you must have.
Are like already made?
Yes.
Awesome.
And I'm a kind of a waffle fanatic. I'm fussy about them. I want them really crisp on the outside and nice and fluffy, doughy on the inside.
I've seen you throw them back at the servers before.
You have not.
Dented foreheads all.
Frisbee time.
Frisbee.
Yeah. No, it's Crusties, but it's their commercial mix.
Okay.
And it's only available at restaurants. And how I got it, I don't know.
You could probably get it.
But you can order it. Maybe cash and carry. I think you can order it online too, because I've looked.
Okay.
And I'm almost out. I just got it once. But oh my gosh, all you do is add water. That's it. It's already got powdered eggs and milk and all that stuff in it. And they're crispy on the outside. They're just beautiful.
No, that's a great thing, because usually homemade ones, no matter what you do, they tend to be a little.
They're fussy.
A little fussy.
They're fussy.
Did you ever eat it? Oh, it wasn't the Scarlet Tree. Well, it's on Roosevelt. They used to do a waffle that was a vegan waffle, and it was a sesame called Sesame Crunch. It was like one of the best things I've ever eaten for breakfast.
That sounds good. Yeah. So along with my waffle, of course,
yes,
we have to have maple syrup, 100% maple syrup. I mean, real.
It should, you know,
or choke cherry syrup.
Mrs.
from Montana.
Butterworth should just. She needs to be retired or sent away.
I think she needs to retire. Yeah. And then my second favorite breakfast is a breakfast that I can make from leftovers if I have cornbread the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And I always plan it if I'm going to fix cornbread and chili or something like that. You know, I'll know, okay, tomorrow breakfast, yay. And what I like to do is take that cornbread, cut, I bake it in squares, you know, in that square pan, and then I cut it in squares.
Okay.
So you cut the square in half.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fry it a little bit in a little bit of butter on both sides and get it kind of grilled.
That's a nice touch.
Mm. And then you have a fried egg. So you put a fried egg on top of that.
Soft center or hard?
Oh, way soft. Just sunny side, preferably.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Well, actually, the eggs go on last. But then, so on top of the cornbread, you have a little bit of salsa. Mm-hmm. You put a few, maybe black beans, mm-hmm. and then you put sour cream, you know, Mexican, yeah. some avocado, mm. and some chopped up tomatoes, and then put eggs on top of that. It's just divine. It is so good. And it's not that bad for you. You know, it doesn't have meat.
No, lots of veggies.
And lots of veggies and the Mexican end of it, you know, with some salsa and avocado mm-hmm. and some good, what's that? Limon. That mm-hmm. seasoning stuff is really good. That's what I like. Yeah.
And now you can get like a jarred Hatch chilies, which are great. I put that on a lot of stuff.
I love those.
Those are really yeah. good. That sounds delicious.
Well, you know, can we talk about cornbread for a minute?
Sure.
I was talking with a friend of mine the other day about cornbread. Mm-hmm. Margie May.
Everyone has an opinion.
Everyone has an opinion. And I wanted her opinion, you know,
no,
because
absolutely.
She's from Arkansas.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know, well, you know, of course, my friend is not a typical Southerner. So mm. she likes her cornbread with half white corn flour, corn meal, mm-hmm. and half yellow corn meal. And she said it just makes a fluffy, nice cornbread. She doesn't like it sweet. Because I said, do you ever use Jiffy? You know, the little mm-hmm. Jiffy things? Because I'm guilty of that. I kind of like them.
There's nothing wrong with them.
But she says they're fine, but yeah. she doesn't like hers that sweet.
Oh.
And in the South, they do like their sweet tea and their sweet cornbread.
Right. And usually, know? And then do you like it crusty or gooey kind of? Because like
I like it well both because I like it crusty on the top, uh-huh. but once you put some honey and butter on it, it's goopy.
Right.
You know,
goopy's good.
Yeah. What do you, what you did? You were talking about some corn pudding thingy.
Oh yeah, like I like cornbread, but I really like I like better. Mm-hmm. When I use words that I put together correctly, what I'm much more fond of is like a corn pudding. That's what I like. And what happens is it's sort of a hybrid between cornbread and corn pudding. When mm-hmm. I make it's kind of like it's set, but it's there's definitely a lot of moisture in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it all it really basically
so you eat it with a spoon. I mean, you serve it with a spoon.
Yeah,
as
you really
to cut
you really
it.
Do. It's basically yeah. It's really kind of a corn souffle in a way. It's just simply or a corn custard. It's like 5 eggs, half a cup of butter, milk. And just a little bit of cornstarch for thickening agent. And then you, if you just want to make it easy, you just put one can of corn and or 2 cans of corn and 1 can of cream corn. You can
mm-hmm.
do that.
Mm-hmm.
And
Yum.
Just mix it all together and then bake it. And it gets a crusty top like macaroni and cheese. But then the inside is
Well, so good. That's not necessarily a breakfast cornbread. That's more like a side dish.
That's kind of a side dish
yeah,
thing.
So it sounds really good.
But I have made it for breakfast before.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, Margie was telling me, you know, in the South, they'll take the leftover cornbread and they'll do one of two things with them. One is they mash it up in a glass of buttermilk, mm-hmm. put some salt on it, and eat it with a spoon. And the other thing they do is they have a dish called chicken and dressing. And they have chunks of chicken and they put the cornbread in there. And,
that sounds
you know,
really good.
That sounds really good and yeah. comforting. I think we'd all like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know me, I had to do a little research on corn, and what I found is that the archaeologists believe that corn was originated in the Teotihuacan Valley in Mexico about 7,000 years ago, but it was grass with mm-hmm. tiny little seeds, and so throughout the centuries, this has been hybridized. And, you know,
it's an insane evolution.
It's insane when you look at it. Used yeah. to be grass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, and speaking to your honey, that's cornbread. One of the best things with cornbread is butter and honey.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Perfect. 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 And then also I found some interesting tidbits on the Iroquois Nation and their corn. They made cornbread by pounding kernels into flour and then mixing it with water to make a stiff paste. And then they added some berries and some nuts and they made them into loaves, which they boiled.
Hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Almost like a steam pudding.
Kind of like a steam pudding and kind of like a bagel.
Oh yeah.
You know, cause they used to, and they would bake them as well in a fire pit, but uh-huh. mostly they boiled them. which I think is just pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's great. It's, you know, it's one of those things during history where you're all, you know, I wish I had one of my, like, if you could have a little trick to history, is that you could, you know, have some sort of on your phone an app that I could look and see when the person who came up with that, how to make, like, bread.
How did they figure that out? So yeah, there's lots of stuff we could talk about with regard to cornbread. I want to talk about biscuits too.
Oh, yes.
And we only have a few minutes left, but you're a biscuit maker.
Oh, you know, I think if anyone's afraid to bake, the easiest thing to start off with is a biscuit.
I heartily disagree.
What?
I do. Isn't it terrible?
Yeah.
Because I cannot bake a biscuit to save my life. And I have the biscuit Bible here. I brought it with me. It's Natalie Dupree?
Yes, I do.
Oh, she's just the southern queen of cooking. Uh-huh. And she has a cookbook called Southern Biscuits. And uh-huh. Look how thick this book is. This is all biscuits.
Uh-huh.
And so I got it thinking, okay, Natalie can teach me how to make biscuits. I can't make them. I don't know if if I'm too heavy-handed. I don't know. But originally, biscuits were not fluffy. Originally, biscuits were like hardtack.
Right.
And that's how the biscuit started. In the south of America, of the United States, is responsible for developing the soft, fluffy biscuits.
And a lot of times using cake flour. And
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And cream. Lots of cream.
Like cream really.
Cream biscuits.
Cream totally elevates it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the name of it comes from French, you know, because they used to, they make like a hard tack and they put it in the oven and then they take it out and do something to it and put it back in. Twice baked. So bis, B-I-S,
uh-huh.
is twice. And cuit, C-U-I-T, is cooked.
Ah.
And so it's biscuit. And they were known during Louis XIV's reign as stone bread.
Really?
And that's what I make, is stone bread. I make hockey pucks. And so tell me about your biscuits. How can I... tell me about biscuits.
Well, I think there are limitations to biscuits. You know, mm-hmm. I think biscuits are not something you want to make and store for the week.
No, I think you want to eat them right now.
Basically, a biscuit, yeah. I consider is something you eat within the day that you bake
yeah.
them. They're okay the next day, but they're better the day you make them. Because they just have, pretty much, I guess my own advice with that is, like, when you make a pie dough,
mm-hmm.
And people say don't handle it too mm-hmm. much, they say the same thing with a biscuit.
They do.
And with a biscuit, it's really easy. You don't have to... You just need to mix it enough and sort of knead it enough to where it comes together enough. And then you wrap it in, I think this is one of the secrets, you wrap it in saran wrap, or you put it in some sort of something that's going to retain mm-hmm. the moisture. And you chill it. It really helps if you chill it before you bake it. And so I usually chill it for a half an hour at least.
Well, maybe we should have a biscuit baking lesson.
Yeah.
I'd like to do that. Yeah. Part of the reason I want to do that is completely selfish, because my whole family of women on my mother's side are champion biscuit bakers, all of them. And they make biscuits like you wouldn't believe. And it started with my great-grandmother, who took a covered wagon from Texas on her 16th birthday, which was the day she got married, and went to British Columbia.
That's amazing.
And she made biscuits. And her daughter, who was my grandma, remembers the biscuits and remembers the stories about them. And they had a 55-gallon wooden barrel of flour on the Conestoga wagon as they were heading north. And she used to make that well right in that big barrel, make that well and put the eggs and milk or whatever you do in there and mix it up in there. And the cinch is there was never a drop of liquid or, you know, a little hard, crunchy piece of flour left in that well. It was so clean. And then the next thing is they all talk about how they called her Mai, how Mai's biscuits could just float across the room.
That's a great story.
I know.
Did she tell you that, or your mom did?
My mom and my grandma.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty special.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm like the loser of the family.
No.
And now it's okay. I'm not, but really,
you're just a student of biscuitry,
and we're out of time, Tom.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, we have 30 seconds left or so, but I just would like to say you're listening to Voice of Vashon 101.9 FM in Sweet Vashon, Washington, and KVSH. I'm sitting here with KVSH. Thank you, Tom Conway and Linda Nygaard. Signing off. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Ciao.
Ciao.